Welcome, everyone, to today's ILTA podcast interview entitled The Rise of the Non-Lawyer, Threat or Opportunity. I am Christiane Matuk, your moderator for today, and I'm a legal innovation manager at Greenberg Traurig. And I'm joined today by the following speakers. We have Josh Lazar, founder and chief everything officer at the tech think tank. We have Harriet Joubert-Vaclis, Senior Project Manager, Legal Operations at CBRE, and Alyssa Cowley, Associate Director, Knowledge Management at Shearman and Sterling. Welcome, Josh, Harriet, and Alyssa. So let's get started. The term non-lawyer is often perceived as quite controversial. Many people who support the business of law feel that it marginalizes their expertise. So with the development of legal technologies, being a lawyer is not always needed qualifications for use. So in your experience, how does it help to be a lawyer or not when using these technologies and being part of legal teams? And Harriet, we'll start with you.
Oh, thanks, Christiane. So as a very specifically not an attorney, I don't necessarily think that it is needed to be an attorney working with legal tech, but I also don't think it's necessarily a hindrance. I do think that as we've seen over the last, 10, 15 years, it is helpful to know who to ask. So if you're looking for, users to get them excited about legal tech, it helps to have specific ideas of what the users could use it for. And I think even the idea of, being an attorney versus not being an attorney being helpful, it very much depends on the technology and what you're trying to accomplish with it. Asking an immigration attorney, is this tool helpful for you when it's meant for a litigation attorney, will not get you the results that you would like.
Yeah, that's a great point. Knowing who to ask, it's good advice. Alyssa, how about you? What do you think about this topic?
As an attorney, I am grantedly biased. I think it can definitely help. Having direct knowledge of what your core user needs will lead to better outcomes. But as Harriet said, I'm a corporate attorney, I wouldn't necessarily know what our litigators would need. So you really need to have an understanding of what your core user group needs. And I think there's, the time that an attorney has spent practicing and going through law school, other people who are non-attorneys have spent that time building really interesting and valuable skill sets. Process mapping and improvement is one that comes to mind. I have wonderful colleagues who are great at that. User experience thinking and user experience design, data management becoming more and more important. So I think the best business of law teams are comprised of a mix of attorneys and non-attorneys.
Yep, great. Josh, how about you?
So there are times where when you are an attorney, it does help when you're using legal technologies, but it really depends on the tool. And as a background, so I've worked in the judiciary as a technologist. I've worked in private practice as a technologist. I've worked in legal aid as a technologist and a small stint in law departments as a technologist. So my lenses are wide and varied. But there are some times when if you need to know the intricacies of how something happens, it might be worthwhile to be an attorney. When I'm helping with bankruptcy in the legal aid space, I'm working with a bankruptcy attorney to make sure that the technology matches the needs of what is being developed, especially when there are new pieces of software coming out, to make sure there's continuity there. But if I'm looking at new business intake, that's legal operations and process procedure. It's great if you're an attorney, you would love to help, but I don't necessarily think an attorney is needed to understand how the legal operations of law within that legal technology is necessary. Is it nice to have? Absolutely. Is it necessary? Only if there is no one else in your organization that has an understanding of how, say, new business intake and how that works through conflicts in the records management process per se. So to me, it's best when everyone understands as best as possible the tools needed for their areas of law and how to support their practice. And it doesn't matter the term you want to use for that person in your firm or organization.
Yeah. I like specifically how you mentioned that on a team, not everybody needs to have the exact same qualification, the exact same, you know, that's like expertise. Because if you are a team, you know, you can ask somebody on your team. And that brings me right to question two, actually. So where do you see non-lawyers, as much as I hate that term, business professionals being part of legal teams today? Are they working cases? Are they supporting transactions? Are there equal team members right now? Alyssa, I'll start with you on this one. You work in a law firm.
I think this can be tricky, you know, classic, it depends answer. To me, dependent on the client's needs and the type of legal work, especially on, you know, live cases, live transactions. In certain cases, you know, even changing one word across the document needs a real legal eye. You really need to be making sure that, you know, in every instance that change makes sense. You know, at the same time, attorneys, you know, do some things that don't, that feel like they shouldn't require a legal eye. You know, like a lot of my time as an associate, I was a project manager. I was managing large amounts of documents on project finance transactions to get it to close. But at the same time, you know, having the legal experience, knowing, you know, okay, if this structural element of the transaction changes, this is how it's going to change our timeline and how I kind of project manage this. And managing all the different aspects of that. So I think it depends. I think it's really going to depend on the legal work.
Yeah, definitely. Those are great points. Josh, how do you feel about this?
So yeah, and that term non-lawyer, I really do need to find a better one. It feels pejorative at this point because there are different people that do different skills in different areas of every organization. And some are going to have knowledge that others don't. I don't want a dental hygienist doing dental surgery, right? There definitely, there are pieces of that puzzle that we understand you need a JD for. But in my experience, I've seen in private law firms, paralegals do a ton of family law work, right? They're doing durable powers of attorney. They're doing a lot of the form generation and the basics. But that paralegal isn't sitting in front of someone, a client, and the one talking to them through the things that can affect their lives. Or how they retire, or how they get a divorce, or how they family plan for the future. So that's to me where the mix is. So do I see people who are in the law firm who do not have JDs working and supporting transactions and being part of teams? Absolutely. I've seen it in every step of the way. But when there are things that are black and white and affects lives, you know, in family law that can affect lives or affect someone deeply, you want to make sure you have the most skilled person in your organization in front of your client to make sure they're getting the best knowledge and access. And whomever that is whomever that is. And typically it is an attorney.
Okay. And Harriet, what's your lens on this? You coming from the in-house space.
Yeah, I actually think the question is, it poses a dichotomy of, you know, the attorneys and the not attorneys. And I actually think we need to think of three different parties, and that's the attorneys and the business of law professionals, and then the technology, right? Because if you have attorney input in how the technology is structured, and Josh mentioned forms. So forms is a great example where if you have attorney input at the very start, when you set up templates, then so much more can be done by the paralegal because the attorney has already done kind of the legal work at the front end. And so I think that over time, we need to think of the work getting done as being split between those three different parties, if you will, with the understanding that there will be attorney input on the front end for some of that technology. And once that is accomplished, then the attorneys can spend more time, you know, actually talking to their clients, and the paralegals can get more interesting work done because they don't need to, you know, go through a document and fill in very specific fields. So I think that the inclusion and exploration of legal tech can really allow everyone to do the more fun parts, or the at least the more human parts of their jobs. And I'm excited to see where that goes.
That's great. I actually not really surprised that we get like a free process lesson along the way from you, but that is fantastic. I like that. So that gets us right into our third question. So with more and more demand to drive and implement legal technologies and higher demand on data analytics, do you think lawyers need to learn these skills? Or could they potentially just hire somebody on their team who handles that aspect of the work? You know, somebody who works alongside them as a team member. And Josh, I'll start with you on this one.
So I think lawyers need to get a little bit beyond, I just want to practice law. You know, that statement, I just want to practice law, technology is not for me. And I've heard that from octogenarians to people who are right out of law school. And I get that. But there are some things that worked well in the 80s and 90s and aughts that don't work well now. And that same string ties the idea of, I just want to practice law. That's wonderful. We're in 2023 at the time of this recording. You need to know a little bit more about that. Don't print out every email. I've seen that in this year still, right? So we need to get a little beyond that. Now, do I want the person who would be representing me or my business coding in React and JavaScript and building applications? No. I'm definitely hiring someone specific to do that, right? So there has to be this kind of balance where you skill up attorneys of any age, of any generation, where they are confident in what they can do, and they're confident in the tools that are provided by the firm, or even if you're solo or a small firm, provided by you, right? You need to be comfortable there. And working side by side with technologists that understand legal technology, legal operations and workflows and those things, I think that's the best outcome for a client, would be to marry and balance those two together. So the lawyer's getting a little bit more skilled up and encouraged to do so and wanting to do so. And and on the other side, within legal operations and legal technology, the professionals working with them also not only guiding anyone in their organization who doesn't have the tech skills they need to succeed in today's time, but to skill themselves up on understanding how things work and process and procedure. Because when you know more of that, like Harry was saying, everything kind of flows a lot better and you can at least speak the same language.
Yeah, exactly. I like that point. Harriet, how about you?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the goal should not be for everyone to be an expert, right? The whole idea of essentially a SWAT team coming together and saying, what are the things that need to happen, and each person can speak to their expertise. That said, I think it is critical for attorneys to at least have a base understanding of what is possible and how things work. Again, not in depth at all, but I've seen a lot of attorneys and people out in the world treat technology as this magic button and thinking that, well, if we just buy this tool, then things will be easier. And there's not an understanding of what needs to be, what the inputs are to set yourself up for success using this technology. And I think that there's also a lack of understanding of how things could work if once you know a little bit more about a tool and what is possible, what can integrate, how things can work together, you get more creative with how you propose things work. And I think that that's the most important part, is that you know enough to be able to say, hey, let me pull in our legal technologist. I know they talked about integrating these two things. Let's talk it through. I think that we have gotten a little bit of, we've gotten a little bit of traction where attorneys understand that they need to be more aware of the technology that's available and that kind of, you know, they have that awareness. But I think it can be intimidating, and especially if you have people on the legal ops or legal technology side who come in and say, here's all 10,000 options for what you could do with this tool. Like, you know, being more specific on what you show people and how it directly relates to what their job is. So from that aspect, I think both sides, the attorneys and the business of law professionals, can do a little bit better of a job understanding what the other group does and how that relates to them, and hopefully get on a more collaborative path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great points. Alyssa, how about you? How do you feel about this?
You know, technology has already greatly changed the practice of law. It will continue to. Nobody can run away from that. And I think all of us, or a lot of us, are used to adopting new technologies anyway, right? We're downloading new apps to our phone. We're getting upgrades, you know, just in the background of our different systems. And more, I think technologies are expected to be user-friendly, which I'm hoping will you know, only keep the ball rolling with attorneys getting more and more comfortable trying these new technologies. Most of our attorneys kind of don't really want a formal training. They're like, I'm going to go in, click around myself, use what works for me, and I'll, you know, Google the feature that I want to see if this product can do it or not. At the same time, attorneys can be a challenging user group. I totally agree with Josh. I think there's lovers and haters of trying new things at every level. And I think that there's a big opportunity for non-lawyers there. You know, billing attorneys have very little time to experiment with a new product. And that said, there's totally attorneys. I am and was one of them, and that's why I'm now on the business of law side of the house. I'm like trying new technologies and thinking about ways to improve things. So lean toward those associates who really are interested in this, or those partners who really want to sponsor, you know, guiding their associates for using new technology. I totally agree with Harriet as well that some of these technologies, you know, there's 100 different buttons and the vendor can tell you about every button and what it does. But the attorneys really want to know, okay, like what are the two buttons that I need to know about that will, and how will that fit into my workflow? And they don't have time to experiment with that necessarily. So really thinking about like, okay, what is the one hook I need that the attorneys are going to care about that is going to show them that the tool will benefit them more than it will have them spinning their wheels. That's a great way to get traction.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great points, especially, you know, from the law firm lens. I like that. So I wonder now, you know, take it a step further. Do you think the balance could potentially tip at one point within law firms, within legal departments, and specialists are leveraged to work and manage cases while lawyers basically just swoop in and focus on the kind of work that requires the practice of law, you know, being almost outnumbered within a firm or a legal department? How do you feel about that? Harriet, we'll start with you.
I think that is unlikely to happen unless billing changes significantly. And I also think, again, that asks a question from the lens of there being two parties, and I think we're talking about three at minimum. I also think that the idea of business of law professionals taking over some of the work that's being done by attorneys, I mean, that has been happening the entirety of paralegals existing, right? The reason that they're there is because they're doing the stuff that the attorney doesn't want to. And especially when you go from a sole practitioner up to, you know, once the law firm starts to grow a little bit, you do outsource some of that work to non-JD professionals. That is going to continue. And I think that the attorneys that I know that adapt best know that that's for the betterment of everyone, right? That's because that gets them more time to, you know, sit with their clients or research what's going on or any of the things that attorneys actually want to spend their time on. And I also think that the question shouldn't just be what can non-attorneys take off of attorney's plate, but also what are we currently doing on a day-to-day basis that we're just doing because that's how things were done. The whole idea of a paralegal or an administrative assistant spending time prepping a FedEx to send documents out for mailing, all of that stuff, you know, DocuSign has taken a huge chunk of the market for that being done. And I think we should be continuously looking for other venues for those kinds of things where no one is sad that they no longer have to send out 35 emails or 35 packages a day. So we should really interrogate what else we can let go like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Great points. Alyssa, how about you?
I like Maria's take a lot. I do think it's going to dramatically vary depending, again, on the needs of particular clients. But I do think that adding non-lawyers, along like adding new technologies, it frees up attorneys to do the things that they went to law school for and the things they are most interested in doing. And I don't mean that to say that like the non-interesting things are going to be left to the non-lawyers. I think it's genuinely some people are interested in doing some things and they don't want to do other things. Or, you know, they find it less interesting to them. So I think everything is to be seen what the mix will be over time. But I think adding non-lawyers, adding, you know, new technologies to take over some of those repeatable tasks, I think is a great idea.
Yeah. How about you, Josh?
So Alyssa is 100% right. Taking things off of the plates of any professional, doesn't matter if you're a CEO, doesn't matter if you're an attorney, doesn't matter if you're a KM professional and you have a KM team, right? It allows two things to happen. One, it allows people who do not have this knowledge or are interested in the space to learn and grow through all the things that happen within that space and to be able to build their skill set up to attain another level in the ladder. It also does the other side. It allows attorneys or business professionals or anyone to do more of what they want, like understanding knowledge management or legal operations, or even getting into legal technology of the hard legal tech, if you want to, moving up the ladder, rainmaking. All those things can happen when you have a team. Me, for example, my business is a small business. I'm at the point where I'm hiring people part-time and slowly and surely, because I don't want to do AP. I don't want to do bank reconciliations. I love developing business and talking to people. I'm very much extroverted. Love that. And I love helping clients succeed. But it's hard to do that while you're also running your books, while you're also business development, while you're also marketing. And that's for any professional. So attorneys, they, depending on the situation, are all these things too. They could be business development. They have to do their books. They have to talk with accounting. They have to go to these staff meetings. They have to do all these things. So, and again, it doesn't have to just be the word attorney. It could be anyone in your organization. So allowing others to get more into the weeds of what you do as an organization, managing cases or anything specifically legal, allows that twofold process to be very successful for you. And I want to note, this is already happening in some areas of law. And to Harriet's point, that there are law firms that have way more people than attorneys. And I'm not talking like the normal ratios. I'm familiar with some of the personal injury firms and whatnot. When you start getting big, it's like 400 attorneys and thousands of team members. So that actually already happens. And actually in those situations, what they're doing is leveraging, they're embracing these new technologies as a whole, and it has to be top down, managing partner or the person whose name is on the billboards or on the door has to be into it. And when you are, that's another way of leveraging people on your team and technology to make all lives easier and allow you to do the wonderful things that we love doing and give opportunities for those to learn the trenches so they can either move on up or maybe they enjoy the day to day and that's perfectly fine too. So I think the balance is already tipped in multiple other law firms, but probably not in any civil legal, a civil legal area, or not too many civil legal areas other than personal injury, and probably not in the criminal side too. But it's kind of already happened. So my opinion, embrace it, because it's going to be a great thing for your organization as a whole.
Yeah. And, you know, listening to all of you, I truly think bringing this back to the title of the session, threat or opportunity, all I hear so far is opportunities. So I like that we're on a positive road here. So on to our last question. Now, what does this all mean for the legal profession, right? Will job descriptions for lawyers change over time? Why or why not? Are new skills needed? Is it a different kind of lawyer that we're looking for coming up? And this one goes to Alyssa first.
So I think that it won't change the job description, but I definitely think it's going to change what a day in the life of a typical attorney looks like. Just like, again, I think all professions have experienced this over the last few decades. You know, my mentor and a leader in the space, Meredith Williams Range, recently at a talk said that you can get to from A to C more quickly, but you still have to get from C to Z. And I'd like to add, you still have to review how you got from A to Z. You may get there more quickly, but you're going to be reviewing it. So I think that, again, technology is here. I think we're all living with changes in technology day to day, right? I mean, the advent of ChatGPT like tools, and it's here whether we're ready or not. But I don't think job descriptions will change, just maybe how we accomplish the work and how quickly.
Okay, Harriet, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that rather than saying it will fundamentally change the job description, I think it will fundamentally change the opportunities available, right? So Alyssa was in a KM attorney, was in a KM attorney role. And I think that that one is such a great example of taking skill sets you learned, you know, working as an attorney, and then serving as kind of the translator between the business side and the attorneys who are actually doing the work. I think that those types of roles are going to become critical. They have been critical, but I think people are going to realize the value of those and how much more they can get out of the technology that they've invested in when they allow people like the KM attorneys to really do their jobs. So I think that over time, it's going to become, there's going to be a wider range of things available to do because you have this experience in the legal field, and you can serve as that connective tissue between the two different parts of the business. And I think that depending on how attorneys approach it, I think that they can also make greater use of technology to, for example, if you're in a nonprofit space, you can accomplish a lot more if you really make use of that technology. I know that the nonprofits tend to not have the money to spend on the technology, but that is a separate conversation that we can spend a lot of time on. But I think that there's also, you know, really interrogating what you want to use the technology for and how you want to make it part of your day-to-day life will allow you to shape a little bit more what you spend your career doing. And I think, you know, I'm not an attorney, but I think that if I were to talk to any people graduating law school soon, you know, I would say, this is an opportunity. You can really make this into what you want in a way that I don't necessarily think was as possible 20, 30 years ago.
Yep. Yeah. Josh, what's your view on this?
So yeah, you threw me for a loop at the beginning when we're talking about threat or opportunity, which was the title. And I don't want to go too far down the road with what this all means. But I will say, as long as bar associations kind of do the things that they do, and the sandboxes like we've had in Utah where there are non-legal professionals doing some legal work kind of continue to go but not see amazing gains, the threats are not going to be there. The only threat can come if there's an opening of the industry to those who are not lawyers. And while I think that is very necessary, specifically in the area of civil legal aid, where there is so much need, I just don't think there will be a threat unless the bar associations and things like that allow other opportunity to happen. So within the context of how the legal system works in America right now, this is all opportunity. In a good way, there are so many things that you can do with a JD and without a JD. Like, there are a lot of knowledge management professionals who are not attorneys, but having that JD probably helps to listen in a way that others might not see. I make that assumption. And the way you learn, the way you grow, and how you either practice or don't with that degree, and passing a wonderfully easy exam, right? It is amazing. And I actually think the opportunities are both within the way you work as an attorney and being able to take those tools you learn through education and enhancing how law firms work and lots of other institutions, because it's not just law firms that have JDs or practicing attorneys going to other areas and doing really wonderful things. I have a friend of mine who's in the financial industry who is an attorney and did all of that work and decided, no, being a practicing attorney is not for me. But when you're reading financial regulations from every country in the world and figuring out how that fits into how you have to practice what you do as a business, those same skills kind of transfer. So what do I think this all means? I think lawyers are going to evolve like they always have, and they continue to do so, as we see with our attorney in this panel. And unless you have like a 40-year book of business where everyone knows who you are, everyone knows who you do, and everyone is going to you to do that, unless you have that level of differentiator, your competitors might start eating your lunch if you don't react or change a little bit as a solo, as a small law firm, or as a big law firm. And there are one of those attorneys in my town where if there's a certain thing that happens, you are going to that attorney, and that attorney does not have a computer, doesn't need one, and will never need one until they retire, because this is the person you go for that if you know who that is. I've had judges tell me they want this person if they get in trouble. So, right? So if the judges know, everyone else does. So that's why I think you're going to have to adapt unless you do not need to drive business with any technology.
Yeah. Great. Well, we are at time. So thank you so much, Harriet, Alyssa, and Josh, for your time and efforts today. I truly enjoyed hearing your points of view on all of the questions that we had. And also thank you to the audience for tuning in today. And we hope that you enjoyed our discussion. Take care.